All right, guys. Week five, eh? Time is flying. Jeepers, it's been 5 weeks already. Alrighty, so here we are. Corporate partnerships and sponsorships for the new economy. So what are we covering today? Today's session is probably going to be a short one, but we'll see how it goes. I don't have a lot to cover today. There's quite a bit of work to do at the end of the session. Because as we are getting closer to the end of the instruction part of the program, there's still a couple of things that I would like us to wrap to cover before we focus completely on the practical side. Because remember, the point of this program is not, academic mastery, it's results. So I'm trying to take you guys at a pace where you are experiencing this to be, I don't want to say easy, but to be digestible in small bits and with a lot of focus on the practical side of things. I don't want to be all theoretical and bog you guys down with theory. I want you, every time you learn something, to feel like I can do that. And I think we are achieving that so far, judging by the feedback I'm getting from you guys and some of the work that some of you are already doing with potential partners out there. My sense is that the pace is just right. And you're finding it easy to wrap your head around this stuff because it's not supposed to be difficult, because it's not the first time you are doing partnerships in your life. If you really think about it, you've done partnerships before, but maybe you just didn't have like some kind of a structure or a framework that you were following. So I can't wait for us to For me to introduce all the concepts, if you like, to introduce all the concepts for the program, so that we can actually put everything together when we go all out. So, because remember, this is week five, and then next week will be week six. And then after that, we will actually have another 7 weeks of the program. And that's the part of the program where we're going to be knocking on doors, where we're going to be taking the stuff that we're learning and going deeper in trying to master it. So today I will be introducing one new concept and then revisiting other parts that we've kind of covered already, but tying them to this part, to this new concept. But you'll see. So what are we doing today? Remember last week, one of the things we, in fact, the last 2 weeks, we spoke about outreach emails, how to reach out to these companies. Now I want to move to the next step. Now they respond and say, this sounds interesting. Let's have a conversation. Then the question is, now what? And that's the concept I want to introduce today, which we're gonna take forward as over the remaining weeks. The other thing I want us to talk about today is what I call partner position. I'll tell you what that is and how it works. We'll cover that today. The other thing is an aspect of research that is focusing on your prospects, on your prospecting. So we'll look into that as well today. And then the other part is keeping up to date with your target companies. How do you keep up to date with them? How do you know everything that's going on that is relevant to you partnering with them? We'll talk about that. And then we'll wrap this up with exercises at the end, which you will do when you finish today's lesson, basically. So let's jump right in and look at this. Naturally, the first thing we're looking at is this part. You've sent your email, they've responded, they're interested to engage further. Now what? I know before I even get into that, somebody's probably thinking, but what if they don't respond? We'll cover that. Not today, but it's coming. Today, I just want to complete the loop, if you like, from beginning to end. But we'll talk about follow-ups, what to do, and all of that. So that's still coming. So today, we assume they responded to your email, which you've been working on for the past 2 weeks. Now, what do you do? I'm sure you'd like to know. So what I want to introduce today is a method. Those of you, obviously, who've been in my other programs, you guys would know that I'm very big on frameworks. I like structure, particularly when it comes to negotiation. So today, for this particular program, what I've found to be the best way to communicate in a meeting setup, whether it's a live meeting, face-to-face meeting, which was easy, of course, to do before COVID, but now that may not even be possible going for some time, possibly. So this will still work if you do like Zoom virtual meetings or any type of virtual meeting. This will give you the structure so that you don't lose focus during the meeting, so that you don't lose control. More importantly, you don't lose control, because a lot of people lose deals because they lose control in the meeting. They become a rag doll that gets thrown around by the company they are negotiating. They get put under pressure. They have all these questions that get thrown at them that they have to, it's almost like drinking from a hose pipe, and yet they're the ones who requested a meeting. It's the last thing you want when to go to a meeting and you are just bombarded with questions because you don't have structure. So this will give you the structure which you will introduce to the people you're going to talk to. You will introduce as part of the agenda in terms of how the meeting is going to go, so that you are in control. I know it's probably a new concept to some people that you can be in control in a meeting with big corporates. Yes, you have to be. Remember, it's your meeting. You requested the meeting, therefore you will lead the meeting. But it's important for the people you're talking to know to have an expectation of what's going to happen. So this method that I'm introducing to you today, I call it the COPED method, COPED. You know, COPED, I guess, just so that you don't forget, I guess, to have a way of remembering it. But obviously, as you can see, it stands for something. Every letter here it represents something. For instance, the CO of COPED represents the context. And I think if there are two phrases that I've used in this program, probably more than any other, are context and research. Context and research. Context. Because these things, they're the linchpins that hold your proposition together. Because without context, it's very difficult to make people understand why they should partner with you. And more importantly, why you reached out to them. Without context, people start to see you like some kind of a salesperson who's shopping around an idea. And it's the last thing you want, as I said last week, it's the last thing you want to be perceived as a salesperson rather than someone special who's got a unique idea that is very specific for this particular partner, for this particular company. So context is the first thing. So that's what CO stands for, context. P, because let me talk a bit about, okay, let me continue because I'm gonna talk a bit about each of these. The next one is, P stands for problem opportunity gap, or problem opportunity link. And I'll explain what I mean by that just now. And then the third thing, the E, is exploring options. And then the D is decision. So let's move forward and see, and just look at each of these just briefly. Remember, today I'm just introducing the concept. This is actually part of what we're going to be practicing over the remaining 7 weeks of the program. We're going to, by the time we're done with this, we're going to be masters of this method, so that any meeting we go to, it just comes naturally. We're in control. We know exactly how to lead the meeting and which direction we want to take it in. So, context. I think you know what I mean now by context, but if you've forgotten, it's basically, in simple terms, it's the reason why you are talking to this company, not just from the perspective of what you want, but also why them? What triggered your outreach? You know, what made you reach out to them? Because you could have gone to any other company. There are thousands of companies out there that are similar to this company. Some of them that are not even similar to them, but why them? You know, so it's very important to remind people when the meeting starts, to remind them why they are there. Because sometimes you may have a meeting with people who did not see your email, who were invited to the meeting. Oh, there's a lady who sent us an email. She's got an idea she'd like to discuss. Would you like to come and sit in this meeting? Sounds interesting. Would you like to come and sit in and hear what this is about? So a person like that would not have a clue who you are, what this is all about. So to kind of revisit the context of your outreach will kind of bring everybody up to speed as to why are we here, all right? So that's basically what the context is. And you start with that in your meeting. And then the other thing is the problem opportunity gap. And let me separate the two. Let me talk about the problem opportunity gap first, and then I'll talk about the problem opportunity link. And you will decide which of these is applicable to your specific case. So, problem opportunity gap, what it is, it's really simple. Think about the real reason for approaching this company. Let's just say, let me use my example. When I approached the JSE, what triggered my outreach was the story that was in Finweek, where they said, where they were basically interviewed and talking about how they would like to do more to promote Altex, how they were struggling, or how it was difficult to promote Altex listed companies. And they were constantly looking for ways to elevate the status of Altex companies in the eyes of investors. So there was a problem. I hope you get this. So there was a problem that they articulated, right? And then my reason for approaching them was because I thought I had a solution that could help. So I was reaching out to them to propose an opportunity for us to do something together to solve the problem. I hope you guys get this. So there was a problem that they articulated, and then I came with an offer of a possible opportunity for that problem to be solved. So what led to us talking was the possible opportunity that I kind of put in front of them through the email that I'd sent them. So the gap in this, so in this case, the example I just gave you, what we have here is actually a gap. So there's a gap between where they are. Here they are today, they have a problem. And where they want to be is where that problem is solved. So there's a gap between where they are and the future where that problem no longer exists because it has been solved. Or if the problem still exists, it's been minimized at the very least. I don't want to create an impression that I solved all, basically I solved the whole problem for the JSE. But I know that our partnership, the book, for instance, it contributed to reducing the magnitude of the problem. It created opportunities for them to get closer to their desired outcome. For instance, the book became a catalyst to attract other companies to list on Altex, basically because it was explaining what Altex was about. The other thing was that it was an opportunity to attract not institutional investors, but retail investors, meaning ordinary people who have disposable income who could afford those small cap companies or those penny stocks, if you like. People who have, let's say, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 rand disposable income or excess, let me put it this way, 5, 10, 20 excess income that they have every month that they could use to invest in the stock market by purchasing shares that cost, let's say, 2 rand a share, 5 rand a share, 10 rand a share, that kind of thing. Rather than the JSE focusing on institutional investors who are looking for relatively safer blue chip stocks. I hope that makes sense. Such as SA Burry, Standard Bank, those types of companies. So these ones are high risk, are perceived as high risk. The small caps or penny stocks, as they are sometimes called, they are perceived as high risk. So a lot of institutional investors, because they have pension funds, or you know that they are managing on behalf of their clients, they are very risk averse. They don't want to take unnecessary risk by going for volatile stocks or illiquid stocks or companies that are still on their growth phase that have risk of going under, that kind of thing. So it was important in the discussion between myself and the stock exchange to focus on the gap that existed between their problem and the solution they desired, okay? So that it becomes easier for them to make a decision on whether they keep their problem or if they agree with me to carry them through over the bridge which connects the problem to the opportunity in the future where the problem no longer exists. I hope this makes sense. Of course, if it doesn't, we've got time. We're gonna unpack it. I'll use diagrams if I have to clarify this point, maybe during our Q&As. So if you need clarity here, don't panic. Let me know. We will make it clear as daylight for you so that you totally get it. So that's the gap. Then what about the link? What about the problem opportunity link? This one, I'll use a different example to explain it. Let's say you as an entrepreneur, you want to solve a problem, let's say for the community. You know, let's say there's a problem in the community, whatever community that may be, whether it's a charity you support, or it's the youth in South Africa, or it's gender-based violence, or whatever issues that are plaguing society that you feel you'd like to, maybe your company or your nonprofit would like to tackle. So there's this problem that is there, that exists. Now, you want to partner with a corporate because you want them to support your initiative or your effort. So what you want to do, you want to take the problem, and it's because they probably don't see it as their problem at this stage, you want to link the existing problem, as you articulate the problem, you want to link it to a benefit for them. So it's not a case of they have a problem and you want to show them that there's a gap between their problem and the possible solution and you are the bridge to help them traverse that gap. But in this case, they probably don't even see the link with this problem because they say, we are in business X, Y, and Z. We sell computers. You know, that's the business we're in, let's just say. They say they sell computers and that's the business they're in. So they don't see how other issues plaguing society could be a problem for them. But then in your wisdom, you are able to take the problem and show them that if they get involved in solving this problem, it's actually good for them. It could have a positive impact for them. It could help them grow their sales. It could help them with whatever benefit, of course, that you deem ideal or that you feel could accrue to them as a result of their involvement. So you create, you help them see the connection between the problem, how if they get involved, how this is actually a good thing because it can translate to a benefit for them. I hope you get this. Like I said, we will have time to unpack it further if it's not clear. So the next step in this conversation, this is the stuff you get done before you go to a meeting, but this is the structure that will guide you through your meeting. So we will, as I said, we will role play some of these in the coming days and weeks. So the next step, now that the context is clear, everybody understands why you chose them, why they are relevant to you, or at least in your opinion for this, whether they agree or not, that's a whole other story, but at least they appreciate your reasoning for getting them to this meeting. Then you've now clarified, it's a back and forth, by the way, the whole problem opportunity link or problem opportunity gap. You've taken through that process. Now both sides, now there's clarity in terms of what the problem is and what the opportunity is. Okay. Now the next step then becomes, how then do we move from problem to problem solved? How do we bridge how do we go over the bridge? Whether the bridge is the gap or the bridge is the link, how do we go over the bridge to the other side? And this is where we are now, where we say exploring options. This is now, remember, before you reached out to them, you already know what you want from them. You already know what their benefit is. But at this stage, you want to open this conversation to co-creation. You don't want to just lay everything out to say, this is what you guys are gonna get, blah, 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 blah. You also want them to contribute to the possible options. Even though you know what you want and you're gonna articulate it well, but you also wanna create an opportunity for a conversation to take place. Why is that? Because people support the things they create. People support things they are part of creating. If in the meeting there are people who get excited because they can see the opportunity and they want to make suggestions of how the project could work, what they can do, what can be done, what about this, what about that, you want to allow those conversations to take place. Whether you will agree or not with their opinions, that's another story, but you want to allow them to engage in the process. And we will unpack how that happens. So that's what this part is, exploring options. That's exactly what it means. You explore all possible options that both sides can come up with until you narrow this thing down to the options that you end up agreeing on, okay? That's why I say co-creation, because it everybody can get involved, all right? So the next thing, this is really the ultimate, guys. Remember, when you send out an outreach email to your potential partner, you're not sending the email to get the deal. Remember, I said that before. You're sending the email to get a meeting. That's really your goal. That's the only goal. The purpose of your outreach email is a meeting. You just want them to respond, and you want them to be curious enough, to be excited enough, to be intrigued enough to want to hear more. That's it. If that happens, your email has done its job. Perfect, done. Now, you're in the meeting. Now, what is your objective here? The objective of the meeting, again, is still not to get the deal. It's still not to get the deal. You have no control on the decision, on the getting the deal part, because it's not just up to you. You will do your part for sure, there's no question, but they also have a right to respond. And they can respond with a yes or a no. Remember when we started, when we said, you gotta give them the opportunity to say no, and you gotta be okay with that, with the fact that they have every right to say no. Yours is to obviously help them see the wisdom of agreeing with you, but you cannot force them to agree. So what is your objective for this meeting? Is a decision, simple. The objective of this meeting is a decision, and a decision is, yay, we are in, we're going, let's do this. Or absolutely not. This doesn't make sense for us to get involved in. We are sorry, we can't get involved. That's a decision. As we've said before, maybe is not a decision. Maybe things cannot be left at maybe. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. That's not a decision. It means there's something missing. That's why they don't know where they stand. It means there's something missing. Either price is an issue, or they have no authority to make the decision, or they are just indecisive people. They don't know how to make decisions, which, by the way, is something that we will talk about how you deal with that so that decisions can be made. So really, this is it. Your goal is a decision. And you're okay with a yes, you're okay with a no, you know, because you're not gonna force people to partner with you if it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make business sense for their organization to get involved. It's really that, it's just logic, okay? So the second topic then for today is partner positioning. What is partner positioning? Partner positioning, it's basically made up of two parts. The first part is this one, your positioning. Because think about it, when you go to a meeting, people who are there, they already have questions in their minds that their brains are just screaming questions that they hope will be answered. And the questions, first and foremost, that they want to understand is, who are you? What's this? You know? Who is this person? So you gotta know that these are questions that exist, and you gotta satisfy these questions first. Because if you jump into other things without addressing these questions early as part of your context, these questions will linger in their heads for too long. Like, but who is this person? But who is this woman? Who is this guy? Yeah, I hear this proposal, whatever, but who is this? So it's very important for you to have a very clear way of introducing yourself. And this is the part where you really want your credentials to come forth, because in the corporate world, as you would know, people respect, you know, qualifications, they respect credentials, you know. So whatever makes you, whatever awards you've won, mention those things at this stage. Don't brag, of course. But one of my friends would argue that it ain't bragging if you've done it. Okay, but you know what I mean when I say don't brag. Don't try to make it all about how great you are. It needs to be in line with what qualifies you to be in this room and to be addressing this topic. You know, so don't overdo the, I'm great, I'm this, I've got this, I want this, I went to this school. Just a matter of fact about who you are and your qualifications. But again, keep it within the context of why we are in this room. I hope that makes sense. Number two is, what do you do, naturally? You know, if you're a plumber, and you're coming here to negotiate, AI, you know, artificial intelligence, it's a bit of a disconnect for the people in the room. They're like, but what's that got to do with you, Mr. Plumber or Miss Plumber? What's that got to do with you? So it's important to say what you do and how it ties in with the next thing that we're talking about. Number three, what are you trying to do now? Meaning, what is this project? by what are you trying to do now is, why are we talking? What is this project you want us to talk about? You know, what's this about? What's this meeting about? What's this conversation about? So you segue into that. And then this is crucial. The fourth part is so important. It's the why. Why are you doing this? This is a wonderful opportunity in most cases, because if there's real alignment between your business and the company you're trying to partner with, there must be something common that makes this partnership make sense, right? There's got to be something common between you and them that makes it make sense to partner. So the why part speaks to the heart of that. The why are you doing this? And by this, guys, it's important that you don't become all fluffy and wishy-washy and vague about want to change the world. Just be specific. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why did you decide to take on this project? So don't be vague. Don't be, you know, don't go all rah-rah on people and confuse them with metaphysical things that are very difficult to wrap one's head around. Be specific, be clear, be tangible as to why you are doing this, why you are undertaking this project. What is it going to do and for whom? Okay? Because this could be really the key connection point. Because if there are people in the meeting who see that the problem you're trying to solve is a real problem and it connects to them directly, whether it's in their personal capacity, then you are winning those people over on your side, because they agree that somebody has to tackle this project. And then they start to lean more towards, we got to be part of this. We got to support this, because they also believe what you believe. If you've read Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, that's kind of, you could actually reference that book to help yourself clarify the why you're doing this. If you check out, I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs have heard of the book, and some of you guys may have already read the book, but I would say reference that book, Start With Why, because it could really help you connect with these people through the why you're doing this. Why you decided that it's got to be you to tackle this problem instead of just ignoring it, right? So the first part, as I said, is your positioning. The second part is partner alignment. Okay, where's the alignment between what you're trying to do and this company you're reaching out to? So obviously for them, remember they're a business. They're only thinking about what's in it for them. So it's so important for you to know what benefit they will get by partnering with you. And I think this has become very evident to me that it's so important, especially because of the questions I keep getting. Every time I bring this topic of partnerships, all I hear in most cases, or the first thing, let me not generalize, let me be fair. Most of what I hear as the first thing is what people want. Oh, gee, I wish corporates can give me this. I want this, I want this, I want this. It's always about what we want. So this preparing in this way actually helps you to clarify your own thinking about what benefit is there for them. You know, in other words, what do you have that can help them accomplish their goal? And I know this question, in most cases, most small business owners will be like, but I don't have anything. That's not entirely true. When I approached the JSE, I didn't have the book, but I knew that with their involvement, the book would exist. Do you get it? And the book would be the vehicle that would help them get their message to the target market. Does that make sense? I hope it does. So what could come to existence as a result of them getting involved with you? Because then that's what you have. That may be, or you may only have access to something that could only be realized by them getting involved. So be very clear what it is you are bringing to the table. Even if you can't bring to the table before the deal is done. But by them agreeing, it activates your ability to make that possibility a reality. I hope that helps. So that's one. Two, what do you want? You will see that I put want in all caps. There's a reason. And if we look at the, if we go further, I'm saying what you want, and this is just me, by the way. Remember, everything I'm teaching here is just me, guys. I'm not the partnership guru of the world. I'm just teaching you what worked for me. Remember where we started with this. I'm teaching you what I've experienced over 15 years of doing partnerships, what I've seen to work for me. So you have every right to test everything and to change everything to be your own reality, okay? So here's what I'm suggesting now, is that what you want, it, for me, is it should be one of two things. One, I'm saying the world or nothing. By the world, I mean, don't be shy. Go to town. If the project you want to partner with requires a million things, don't say, oh, but I can't, I'm too scared to list all of them. Put everything on the table in terms of what the project needs, what is required. List them. Why? Because you can always walk it back to the things they are comfortable to do. Because they could say, out of these 100 things you say you want, we may not be able to fulfill all of them, but we will do these five. And those five could be the 80% of what is needed, okay? So rather go big, go ask for the world. And if you can't ask for the world, then I would say the best thing is to just focus on their benefit and ask, and basically not say what you want up front. You know, where you focus on everything that's good for them until they say, so what do you want for this? I don't know how many times I've done partnerships where I never said what I wanted until the other side was so satisfied with what they were getting and they were happy that they would get everything I've brought to the table. Then they say, so if we're going to get all these things, what are you going to get? Or sometimes they would say, how much is this? Or how much do you want for doing this for us in some cases, okay? So in this case, this could be a segue into the second part of co-creation, where now it's a case of, it's clear what they get, but now it's a case of what you get. Then it could be, you could actually even get to a point where they make you an offer. Seriously, when they make, because sometimes we tend to be so limited in our own thinking that we ask for too little. When corporates are so expansive in their thinking and they wanna, based on their appraisal of the value you bring, they wanna offer you a lot. So had you, so sometimes by giving them a chance to make an offer, you could get a lot more than you bargained for. Remember, if they are offering less, then it triggers a negotiation where you could say, well, how about, remember this is co-creation. If they offer something less, you could then have a comeback and say, well, how about if you guys could also add this and add this and add this? Now we're going back to the things you wanted, but you were just playing it safe. I hope that makes sense. And you're not playing a game, by the way, by doing this. Because if you can't ask for the world, then I say ask for nothing. Let me explain, because the other bullet points that I have here, they get to the heart of that. The danger that I see a lot of people carry is the need danger, is that they have a need. And I'm saying, yeah, never ask for what you need, you. Because sometimes we do projects, yes, for our companies, yes, for nonprofits. But the reality is that as entrepreneurs, we are driven by our own need, particularly if it's money related. As much as the money will go to the business, but you know that you're desperate for that money in some cases. You need it to pay rent, to pay for your car, because you're going to get maybe a commission from your company, or you're going to pay your salary, whatever the case. So your own need can actually betray you when you go to these negotiations. You know, you may not need the money personally, but you need it because of what it will do for your company. So I want you to always watch out for what you need. Be careful. That's why I use the word want, where I said, what do you want? You know, because you don't need, remember what we said, you don't need anything. You're not needy. You're not in need. You know, everything you need, you already have. You need oxygen, you've got that. You need shelter, you've got that. You need food, you've got that already. So it's not a need, because if you don't get this deal, it's not like your life will be over. So it's not a need, all right? So just be careful to always be so consumed by what you need. You see, people who have a need are vulnerable, especially in a negotiation. People who have a need, they are weak during a negotiation because their need puts them in a very awkward position. It makes them vulnerable because it can be taken away. Their need can, if that need is not granted, then they are hurting. So that's why you must be careful of the need. But people with no need have power. Think about it. When you have no need, people have nothing to hurt you with. They don't have a tool they can use to hurt you because you have no need. So people with no need actually have a whole power in negotiation, okay? Because now what you've done, by focusing on what the company wants and what they get, you've induced the neediness on their side. So now they are the ones who have a need, or they want what you are proposing. You've got power now because you're not needy in this case. I hope this makes sense to you guys. But here are some things to always keep in mind. And I say these are success keys to always keep in mind when you go to a meeting. Win-win relationships. Remember, you want a win-win relationship here. You want both sides to be happy. So don't focus, again, on your personal need, on what you need. I can't over-elaborate and belabor this point enough. So the second thing is, it's important to do your research so that you can speak their language. You know, to know what phrases are important to them. And you can do that by just reviewing their most recent communication, whether it's in the media, whether it's a press release they've issued, wherever they've been quoted saying something, particularly around the context that led you to be here. Use those words, use the language they use, because it's, you know, you are entering a conversation that's already taking place in their heads. So don't just talk don't be clumsy in your language. Use the language that they are already using. I hope that makes sense. And then, don't be generic. You know, remember we spoke about this earlier, because part of your context is that you targeted this company specifically. You're not just a salesperson who's shopping around, sending an email to 100 companies and just changing their name. But it's the same vague, broad email, okay? So just keep these things in mind in this meeting, that this, you want them to feel like they're the only company you reached out to for this, because it makes sense only for them to partner with you in this way. And then the third part of today, or is it the fourth? Is, in fact, it's the third, yeah. Research, but particularly, with particular focus rather to prospecting. So when it comes to researching your prospects, I think one of the questions people have, particularly from the exercise that I gave you on week one, where I said, who are your top 20 targets? It's easy to think of big name companies, but what tool can you use to decide which companies to focus on? Who else? If you can't add up to 20, how else can you identify potential partners other than the obvious names that you came up with, right? So this could help you. Number one, who's already serving your target demographic? because you've got the market that you serve, and I assume the project that you want, there's a beneficiary somewhere, whether it's clients, whether it's society, whatever the case. But the question is, who else in terms of corporates, who's already targeting that market? Who's already serving that market or a similar market? You know, if for instance, what you're trying to do involves, one example, other countries. Maybe you want to partner with institutions or companies outside of your direct market. So who's serving a similar market? Who, you know, for whom it would make sense to partner with you in your market, if that even makes sense to you. But for someone who this is relevant, this, they'll understand what I'm trying to communicate. Yeah. But for most people, it's all local. So who's already serving your target demographic? Number two, what are their focus, strategic priorities, and marketing initiatives for this year? What are they focusing on this year? What are their strategic priorities this year as a business? And what are their marketing initiatives that you are aware of? You could research this in advance, and you can also ask during the meeting for them to tell you more about these things. They'll be more than happy to tell you. So don't be shy to say, my understanding is that you guys, this year, it seems to me like you're focusing on these initiatives. Am I correct in assuming that, or in coming to that conclusion based on your campaigns, whatever the case? But is there, what else are you guys, what would you say is your focus this year? And what are your strategic priorities as a business? And what are some of the marketing initiatives that you want to focus on this year? I'll tell you, but don't be shy. And then the third thing is, how are they currently reaching their target market? How are they reaching that market that you want? Because if you know that, you could also glean some of their messaging to that market. If you know what media vehicles or medium or media that they use to reach to that market, okay? And if you've got something else as an entrepreneur that could help them reach more of that market, maybe that they're not using, then that becomes a plus for you. And then number four is, do they have other partners? Or are there other initiatives that they support? Why is that important? Because you want to be prepared when they say, oh, we already support something like you, so we're not interested. So you want to be able to get a comeback, but that's not the only reason. Another reason is, this could be your points of entry. Because if you know other causes or other partnerships or other initiatives they support, what if you could reach out to those partnerships or to those initiatives to strike a deal directly with them, which you know that could make it easy for you to be introduced to this company? Let's say they support a charity that you would love to volunteer for, whether it's just for an afternoon or where you would like to donate things. You go and create that relationship by being a contributor to the nonprofit, and you establish a relationship with them so that maybe you get invited to their fundraisers, which may lead to you bumping into the people from the corporate you want. Remember, these things are campaigns, guys. It's not a case of next week, you just want to get out there and get a deal. Some of these, because depending on the magnitude of the deal and the complexity of the deal, it could require months and months and months of campaigning. It could require 6 months, it could require even a year. So be prepared. That's why I always advocate not to pursue just one deal at a time or one company at a time, so that you don't rush, so that you don't become desperate. I hope that helps. All right. So one of the questions people always ask me is, which project? I mean, if I have 20 potential companies for things that I would like to do, I don't know where to start. My answer is really simple. Yeah. And again, it's just my own opinion. I always say, start with something that really inspires you. Start from your heart. Because the things that inspire you, they keep you motivated, they keep you driven. You know, the audience or the demographic you want to serve, you want to make that a reality than choosing things purely because of money. Because sometimes if your only motivation is money, I find that sometimes money doesn't really pull the heartstrings as a big why, as service and as benefiting others can. So just, again, it's up to you which one you choose, but make sure you've got a bigger drive than I just want to make money. That'll be my 2 cents on that one. So how do you keep up to date? How do you keep up to date with your target partners? So here are some suggestions for you. It goes without saying that if you're gonna reach out to a company, you gotta pay attention to what they're doing, what they're saying, what's going on about them, what's being reported about them. Because what if there are terrible things that they're doing that do not align with your values? Did you ever consider that you may not want to reach out to a company purely because your values and theirs don't align, even though they have all the money on earth? So it's not just about what you want sometimes. It's not just about them being, you know, your savior or being a giver to you. It's also about your own respect for your own values as well. So, but that's not the reason why I'm saying pay attention. It's just an obvious thing to do. Obviously, you part of your research, you got to know what's going on. So I would suggest that the companies that you're targeting, you see those 20 companies you wrote down, or at least the ones you're going to go after first, follow updates on their websites. What are they talking about? What are they communicating? Follow the things they post on social media. Because if you're going to use their language that as it relates to your proposition, it's important to hear them communicate. I'm sure you agree there. You must also set Google Alerts. Set Google Alerts so that you know what's going on, so that Google can inform you whenever there's news about them, whatever. If you don't know how to set Google Alerts, just go to Google and say, and type literally how to set Google Alerts. It's simple. It will just show you the steps and just do it, and then use the right keywords, company names or any other keywords that relate to what you want to know about with regards to this company. So set those. News. You know, make sure you keep up with news about these companies that you want. Because all of these things give you the context you need. All of these things are helping your research. Okay. And if it's large organizations, chances are they are spending a lot of money in advertising, which means you can watch their TV ads, you can watch media promotions they're doing or campaigns that they're running, because you could get insights from watching those things, because it gives you a sense of what their strategic objectives are with regards to marketing and related things, okay? If they have a newsletter, subscribe to the newsletter so that you can read something that they publish. Hear exactly what they're saying, what they want to communicate, maybe once a month or every week, however long, whatever the frequency of their publishing, of their newsletter, but subscribe to them. Another thing I'd recommend is that different markets have corporate social investment handbooks or corporate social responsibility handbooks. Find out who publishes CSI handbooks in your market and just buy it, subscribe to it, buy it, do whatever. Because what those handbooks can do for you, they'll tell you what companies are focusing on, how much they spend on education, what they spend on this, so that you are informed. Of course, these things may change due to COVID, but it's still They may not change much, bytes may be reduced, but it still gives you a sense of what their mission is. If they're advertisers, and especially if they're big advertisers, every market would have an advertising industry, like advertising industry publications and newsletters. Sign up for those, buy those, so that you can track your target companies, what they're spending on advertising, what kind of companies they're running, why they're running those campaigns, what are they saying about what's important. Of course, this one goes without saying, get their annual report, particularly if they're a listed company. Find a way to get your hands on their annual report, not because you have to look at their numbers, because most people don't want to look at financials, but though you could glean a lot of useful information on what they say they're doing and their values and what's important to them, because everybody wants to look good when they issue out an annual report, trust me. So get a copy of the annual report. Make connections on LinkedIn with people from that company, but don't limit it to the people you want to reach out to. Even, let's say you're an accountant by training, but you run a company that does something else, and your proposition to this company has nothing to do with accounting, you could still reach out to somebody who's also a CA who works for the company, because there is something in common between the two of you. Establish a relationship with people where there's some kind of commonality, okay? Because those are people who could become your ambassadors within that company in future, which leads to the next point where I'm saying get an insider in those companies who later down the line could become somebody who champions your cause. But you can't just go to people to say, I want you to champion my, they don't know you. So by connecting with them on LinkedIn and commenting on their posts and just starting a relationship with them, you can, that kind of earns you the right to send them a note on LinkedIn and say, hey, I've got a quick question. I see you guys are doing this. Who may be the right person in your company? I've got a proposition I want to discuss. Who may be the right person for this? That could be the beginning of a relationship with that person where they could actually become your champion going forward, okay? So don't abuse people in a sense. Don't use them in a negative way, let me say. But be genuine and make friends, okay? So those are just some of the ideas I want to give you that will help you. You don't have to do all these things, by the way. But I'm just giving you options so that you've got enough resources to conduct proper research so that you could build a strong case for context. So I'm wrapping up now. As I wrap up, I just want to give you some exercises to do. You'll be glad to know that it's really nothing new. But as I said, guys, we're now on week 5. We're going to do week 6. After that, we will be coming back to review a lot of what we've done, putting it together into a system that you're going to use going forward. So we're going to need you to have done at least some of the exercises that I've asked you to do. First of all, the 20 questions that I asked you to create. I know that I may have answered some of them to date. It's fine if I have answered them, but I want you to complete that list of questions, because I want to make sure that by the time we're done with the project, with the program, I've answered all your questions, all of you. So I'll use these as a checklist to make sure that all the pressing questions that you brought when you came into the program, they get answered for you. I think that's a great service to you. So take this seriously. If I've answered some of your questions, add more questions, because I'd love to answer all your questions. So I want to urge you to finish this exercise, please, this week. Please complete this exercise, get those 20 questions, and then you're going to share them with me when the time is right, so that I can use them as a checklist to make sure that I've answered all your questions. Number two, your top 20 target companies. This is for your benefit. Complete this, please. Get this exercise done. because it's probably going to be helpful to us over the next 7 weeks. Number three, the partnership thinking plan for the company that you currently want to go after. Maybe one, two, or three of those companies that you want to go after now. Get this thing, the partnership thinking plans done, because as I'm going to be helping you individually, this is going to be helpful to both of us. Number four, today I introduced this partner positioning concept. I'd like you to go back and answer those questions, because they'll make your life a lot easier when you have to go to the meeting. And as we practice for your meetings, as we prepare, this is going to help you to have these answers readily available. That's it, guys. I'll leave it here. I'm done for this week. Go do your exercises. We will touch base during our Q&A later this week. Don't forget to send any questions you have for this week so that they can be answered during the Q&A. Have a great week, guys. You take care and all the best. Bye-bye.